Hello, family. My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic. I want to read something from one of my meditation books. It's called 365 Tao, spelled T-A-O. It's called Practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, you have won. If you were lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it's prayer, then pray every day. If it's meditation, then meditate every day. If it's exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you're truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? If your mind is closed, you cannot learn anything new. Closed minds reject anything different. Anything that conflicts with our old beliefs, beliefs that may be false. We forget that experience is stronger than belief. Fear is the force that keeps minds closed. Only open minds can receive and process new knowledge, which can lead to new practices and understanding. One of my teachers was a man named Thomas Merton, and there was a quote. Says, those who think they know from the beginning will in fact never come to know anything. There's another quote from Emmett Fox that says, knowledge received intellectually provides no nourishment for the soul. I get in both of those. I die each night. I'm born again each morning. And I was given a set of strict spiritual disciplines as outlined in the big book on the 10th and the 11th step. There's a line that we talk about. We've talked about it today. Maximum service, where it says our real purpose. Maximum service is on page 77, to God and the people about us. What I want to talk about is, it says, my real purpose is to fit myself. 10 and 11, as a result of the course of action outlined in the first 9 steps, is how I fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to my fellow human beings. I'm going to talk about some of the things I've done, and then I'm going to talk about 10 and 11, and then I'll field some questions. Before I forget, there's been many, many books over the years that have influenced my experiences. When I get a book, when my creator sends a book to me, I am looking for practices that I can bring into my life to have the experience and throw the book away. I am not looking for knowledge. 3 books in particular that had a huge impact on me as it relates to the 10th and 11th step. One of them is The Power Now by Eckhart Tolle. The 4 Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. Conversations with God, Book 1 by Donald Neil Walsh. And along the way, there's about 300 more. Most of which I have given away. Those 3 in particular. And doing work out of those books, because all 3 of them give you some work, a course of action, spiritual living, a course of action. I've had to go to those books to even understand what the 10th and 11th step in the big book was saying to me. Much like We Agnostics, I think, is a profound piece of literature, what 10 and 11 speak to me about is also a profound piece of literature. When I came out of the insane asylum in 1991 and then went up to the hill country, having had that experience and not wishing to repeat it, I really started to read the 10th and 11th step and realized how little of it I was A, practicing, B, did not understand. In particular, I had done nothing with meditation. So I went and got a simple little book on meditation. And I'm an athlete and I work out, so I get daily discipline. I went out and I bought a timer. And I started with about 7 minutes, two times a day. I had no idea what was going on in my mind till I began to sit in the silence. There's a reason we run from meditation. Because those of you who have recall of your first experiences, I have this timer going and these voices start. I call it the committee. You all had that happen probably this morning when you woke up. You have several different voices talking to you. I'll give you an example of some of my voices. One, of course, is we have the member of AA. We have a spiritual guy. They're two different guys. I now own my own business, so we have that piece. I've always been a jock, so he's in there. There's a part of me that's always been Rambo, and he's in there. The ladies' man is in there. There's about six, seven, eight of them, and you all know what I'm talking about. This morning, when you got up, they started talking. My experience is I no longer resist that, but one of them better be in charge first thing in the morning. One of the things I do when I work with the residents at my recovery center is I take a table and I introduce them to their characters. And I sit them down, and by the time they're done, most of them have about eight of them, and they all have different agendas and different voices. It's a very interesting experience, but somebody's got to take charge of that. But I begin to work with meditation, and pretty soon 7 minutes grew into 10, and that grew into 15, it grew into 20. A lot of profound experiences in meditation. I begin to love the effect produced by meditation. Silence, I believe, is the language of God. And it was through the meditation process that a sense that all is well began to permeate throughout me. And fear began to abate. And I began to have a much more intuitive sense about what to do with my life, with people I sponsor, etc. And from that day to this, I've had a daily meditation life. Along the way, I have gone to monasteries. I have taken classes. I have read books to improve conscious contact. You know, if you want to find out about meditation, read a book from someone who's been meditating 30 years. Incredible stuff out there. I said this not long ago, and as I stand before you now, I still feel the same way. Of all the things I've done since I was separated from alcohol, the practice of meditation is probably by far the most profound impact on me. It's where all the dots connected, if you will. My current practice is Monday through Friday, I get up at 4:30. See, somewhere along the line, I had to quit lying to myself about this relationship, quote, with God, right? Because you would ask me, you would say, well, what's the most important thing in your life? There was a time I used to say being sober till I realized I don't have the power to keep myself sober. So I quit saying that and instead said conscious contact. And then a very smart man one day asked me, well, how much time do you spend alone seeking conscious contact? And of course I said, what do you mean? I still get up at 4:30. The reason is I normally don't leave for work till 6:30. And my current set of practices in the morning take about an hour. A little coffee, a couple cigarettes. I have 3 meditation books. I read 84 through 88. And I'm currently working out of one of Eckhart Tolle's book called Stillness Speaks. And I'll read a couple paragraphs and then I set a timer and I meditate. Currently doing 20 minutes. Times I've done less, times I've done more. I have no expectations in meditation. I hear a lot of stuff about meditation. Well, I'm going to quiet my mind. Good luck. I'm going to think spiritual things. Good luck. First start meditating, all this lustful stuff's roaring through my mind. Oh no, God's going to strike me dead. Until I read a book that said, don't pay any attention to your thought life. Just let it flow. Think of it like leaves on a stream. Oh, wow. I can do that. Focus on breath. 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 Breathe in. Breathe out. Breath. Oh, okay. See, there's no arrival place with this. Where I'm at in my life, if you will, is no better than any other place I've been. It's just different. That's all. It's an inward journey, like this. But I sit. My responsibility is to sit. There's a spiritual law I discovered. It goes like this. God will not do for Mark what Mark's supposed to do for Mark. God does not set my alarm. Mark does. People say, well, you know, God keeps me sober. Is that true? Absolutely. But if that was all this program was about, this book would be one page long. It would say, God keeps you sober. Have a good day. It doesn't. It gives you and I a set of things to do to wake up to the fact, to have an awareness there's this power, there's this God. Not an intellectual belief, an awareness, live, pulsating. And then a set of disciplines that we get to keep working with till we die, to improve conscious contact with that power. That's my responsibility. That's not God's. So 5 days a week, I get up and I do that. And I read those prayers upon awakening. Whole bunch of prayers in there. I was probably 13, 14 years sober until I realized a lot of the 11th step. They use a very interesting combination of words, thought, life. I'd never heard those two words side by side. Thought life. Pay attention to your thought life. And then I read a couple of other books that said, Mark, a lot of your external world is a manifestation of your thought life. Scared the shit out of me. Because I'm asleep. I was really asleep to my thought life. And if that was true, I was in trouble. Begin to pay attention. You know, you hear the term spiritual awakening. For me, what an awakening was a separation from my thinking mind and awareness. There came a time through meditation that one day I realized I was not my mind. There was something greater than my mind going on, and I got to experience it. And that was a miraculously freeing day. My mind is like my hand. It's an instrument that was given to me as I slop around the drama called life. But I am not my mind. Wow. That happened through the process of meditation. Now I get to watch. 10th step. Watch. What? Watch thought life. Right? See, get interested in yourself. Get interested in your true self. It's fascinating. Watch yourself. Wake up enough to be able to do that almost from a distance. It's almost like being in a control tower, watching yourself. I find myself to be incredibly amusing. I certainly do not take myself quite so seriously anymore. Normally, every year, I have one or two books that I work with in terms of practices. As I've learned more about spiritual laws, which I strongly suspect govern the universe, and as far as I can tell, God doesn't change just because I'm an Elkie for me. I've gone back to Conversations with God, Book 1, and I'm rereading that. Since 1997-98, I began to work with a vision, a yearly vision. Some people call it goals. I take one of these. I cut out all kinds of things from magazines in every single area of, quote, my life, from career to money to my physical body to relationships to spirituality, and I put them throughout this whole book, and then I write out my vision. You got to remember earlier on in the steps, the big book talks about a power greater than myself needs to restore me to sanity. In the third step, I make a decision to turn my will over to God, correct? And by the time you get to the 10th step, the 10th step says that you can use your will along this line all you wish. So is it possible that if my will is aligned with that will, that my will for me is God's will for me? And that I maybe better get a little bit more involved with the life that I am creating. And I begin to do that. I took complete responsibility for my life. Wow. What a deal. 10th step. This thought brings me to what thought? Finish amends. Finish amends. I was talking to John earlier. I think it's very important if you're in the program, if you're fairly new, or even you've been around for a while, that you always have the capacity to locate yourself in the recovery process. Well, he's making amends. So he's located in the 9th step, working with the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. And the book in this particular area talks about this thought, finishing my amends, brings me to step 10, which suggests I continue to take personal inventory and continue to write any new mistakes as I go along. Now, over the years, I've gone to a lot of meetings where they talk about the 10th step and they talk about the one sentence. The 10th step is 2 pages long, and it's an abyss and a lifetime of practices. The last 4 paragraphs of the 10th step are never talked about. And when I begin to wake up and I really begin to look at these and begin to practice them, they became very profound and experientially. It talks about, here's an instruction, I vigorously commenced this way of living as I cleaned up my past. So the day I begin to make amends, I begin to work with the disciplines of the 10th and the 11th step. It says, I've entered the world of the Spirit. What does that mean? Why don't we bring that up as a topic in our meetings? The topic this evening is, I would like you to share your experience with what it's like to have entered the world of the Spirit. Why aren't we talking about that stuff?
Well, I get saved from my job.
I'd like to hear about the world of the Spirit. Sounds pretty good to me. I'm a Cheech and Chong guy.
Yeah, man, talk about that, Jed.
What do they mean by that? See, my experience was, till I did a bunch of work, particularly with 4 through 9, is this is language, and I don't have any understanding on an intellectual level what that sentence means. Now, I'll tell you what my experience today with that sentence is. You write that inventory and do that 5th step, you disconnect from ego. In the 7th step, you connect to God. In the 9th step, you connect with your fellow brother and sister. That's what it is. In a way, I'm awake to the fact that housed inside this body is the Spirit. That whatever I am prior to entering this body and what I will be after it's gone, call it a spirit, call it what you will, that's what I've entered into. And I have an awareness of it. And the rest of the language in the 10th and 11th step is speaking to me using that part of my being. Whoa. Think of it this way. You get up to the 9th step and you open that door. Enter the world of the Spirit and you enter. You're entering a whole new world. what the book says in 10 and 11 and then 12 is designed to keep me in that room.
Oh, well, I turned it over and I took it back.
Show me where it says that shit in here. It does not say that. It's because my experience is that's not what happens. So I've entered the world of the Spirit. My next function, having entered the world of the Spirit, is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. I thought the Raymer brothers did a fabulous job of talking about understanding and effectiveness. How do you work with a drunk? How do you sponsor? What do you bring into your group? You understand? I let go of what I think that looks like. I'm here to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Of what? World of the Spirit. World of the Spirit. So you've got to get rid of it. Let me make a statement. If I care about how you feel about what I say to you, I'm useless to you. Get rid of this idea. It loves all fluffy. You get that? See? I'll never lie to a drunk. We'll take your time. No, the book says, desperation of a drowning man. Here's the deal. You want to take your time? Be drowning in a pool. When I walk by, hey, I'll be back later, okay? No hurry here. I bet you want my ass catapulted in there with you, don't you? This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for my lifetime. I wonder what that means. It means my lifetime. It means the rest of my life, my lifetime, right? Continue to watch. By then, my spirit has awakened and I can watch myself having this experience. For what? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. This is an opinion. I can't find it in the book. It's based on experience. All of my defects, my selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, are fueled every time by selfishness. And if I'm devoid of selfishness, they're not fueled. Do they lie within me? Absolutely. Absolutely. When these crop up, not if, it gives me a practice. I ask God at once to remove them. Ask. Ask is a spiritual practice. You could take the word ask and work with it for 6 months. Just that word alone. Ask. Ask. Turn. I resolutely turn. Turn. Get the ego away from yourself. Turn to someone you can help. At an elevator. Starbucks. At work. Turn. Turn is a spiritual practice. Turn. Turn. Ceased fighting anything or anybody, dash, even alcohol. I could work with that one the rest of my life. What does that mean? It means I've ceased fighting anything or anybody, including alcohol, including myself, my defects, my life, Republicans, Democrats, take your pick. I have ceased fighting. I can't practice that with self-will intact. I'll fight everybody and everything. Ceased fighting anybody. Even alcohol, because for this time, sanity will have returned. And then they talk about where I'm at with this thing called liquor. And then they go on and they offend me because they tell me that I didn't do anything to bring this about. Seems to me I've done a little bit, right? I was given a new attitude toward liquor with no thought or effort on my part. It, this new attitude toward liquor, just occurs. And they describe it. It's called a position of neutrality. I don't walk around wondering whether I'm going to drink or not drink. It's not even in my being. Because I've been placed in a position of neutrality. It says I haven't even scored off. It says instead the problem's been removed. What problem? The malady. When the malady is overcome, I straighten out mentally and physically. The problem's been removed. It does not exist. Is that your experience? Turn these into questions. Is that your experience? If it's not, you missed something. Probably unfinished amends. Right? I'm neither cocky nor afraid. That is my experience. Is it my experience? That's how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. Earlier it said fit myself. They're describing fit spiritual condition. See, I'm given a daily reprieve based on one thing and one thing only, as far as I can tell. What is that? Fit spiritual condition. Who's responsible for it? I am. Not God. I'll twist your head a little. There is a theory that God gave us free will. How many of you believe that? That God gave us free will. Okay? Half the room, the other has, I ain't raised my hand with that crazy guy.
God knows where he'll take that one.
Well, since I've not God, I don't know if that's true or not, but it, you know, probably has a little merit. If, in fact, this power has given me free will, that being the case, that power will never interfere with the path of my will. If I choose not to make this a way of life, choose not to sponsor, work the steps, do whatever, will that power interfere? No. Why would it interfere with its greatest gift? It won't. The other side of the coin is, if God gave us will, and through a series of actions, I say to that power, I want to meet you, I need you, that power must come. That's my experience. Because later it's going to go on and talk about, I'm given this daily reprieve, and every day is a day when I must carry the visions of God's will into all activities. How do I serve thee? These thoughts go with me constantly. Check these two sentences out. By the way, take these into your meetings too. I hope we mess up some meetings around here for a while. Here's what it is. I can exercise my willpower along this line all I wish. It is the proper use of the will. It is the proper use of the will. I can exercise my will along this line. You better get involved with your life. 10-step, line of the will. What's it look like? I don't know about the rest of you. I'm at home. I got a couple cats. One's named Hobo. One's named Bill. Now, Bill's worked all the steps. He's cool. Hobo refuses to write inventory, which means he lives a life based on self-will. And I can see it in both of them. And when I'm home in the morning, I got my plants and I got my cats, and boy, I am hooked up. I am really spiritual. And I will open that door and it's on, baby. Traffic. The line's a little too long at Starbucks. See, I walk out and I get in and I'm really hooked up. Line of the will. You get that? Spiritually fit. Line of the will. And I get in my car and the first thought's, it's going to be shit having to work today. Gee, I just moved over. There's a line at Starbucks. Pisses me off. Boom! I beat all my employees to work. Boom! If you're not working with this shit by the end of the night, no wonder you're spinning like this. You bring that shit into my meeting. What the 10th step is designed to do is, about the first time I get over here, turn what? To God thought. Boom. Back again. 10 minutes later, Starbucks. They need to hurry up. They need to give me a private lane. Thy will be done. Boom. Back. Right? You see? Works like that all day long. Practice, practice. Fabulous stuff. Turn, practice, come back, line of the will, all day long. Talks about I receive strength, inspiration, and direction. I become God conscious. I begin to develop this vital sixth sense. Sixth sense. Here's another great topic. How many of you have ever gone to a meeting where the chairperson said, share your experience with your new sixth sense? That ever happened? Why don't we talk about this stuff? Gee, I wonder. See? Incredible stuff. What does it mean? Sixth sense. Wake. I'm awake. Sixth sense. Intuition. Power. Start working with that sixth sense. See? You've all had that happen. Driving down the road, voice says, call. Call this person. Just follow it. You act on it. Right? Single. You meet this gal and the voice says, stay away. No. We've all paid the price for that one. I tell you, this program does work. I've been married and divorced 4 times, but I haven't found it necessary to get married in the last 12 years. Incredible stuff in the 10th step. You can work with it. Here's my deal in the 10th step. The 10 steps, what I work with, when I leave my plants in Hobo and Bill and I walk to my car. All day long I work with 10. See, if you're in the middle of the road and there's an 18-wheeler coming at you, not a good time to analyze how the hell you got there. Get out of the way. 10th step, all day long, line of the will. Now I go back home at night, got the plants, I'm all spiritual again. Bill and Hobo, and now I'm going to do my 11th step. See, I did my 11th step in the morning, walked out the door, worked with 10 all day long. Now I'm back home again. The spiritual guy comes out again. Got to finish the night with the evening review and answer all the questions. Make amends promptly if I've harmed anyone. Do a little meditation. 11th step. You get that? I'm back to the 11th step. Answer the questions. Go to bed at night. It's clean. It's clear. There's no guilt. There's no shame. There's no remorse. There's no anger. There's no resentment. I wake up the next day. Now I'm going to give you I want you to think about this. If you're not doing the kind of stuff I'm talking about with 10-11, I talked about line of the will. What happens if you go a week and don't do an eating review, let alone a month, in every area of life? You get that? With self-will going on. You want to know why you have so much suffering in the room? Based on my experience, that's why. I'm given a daily reprieve based on fit spiritual condition. I was given some tools to do that so I can go to bed at night and sleep peacefully with a clean slate, or at least I know what to do to clean up the slate. Line of the will. Stay aligned. This is incredible fun stuff to practice. See? Be quick to see where religious people are right. There's incredible books out there. Incredible books. Tell you what to do. Meditation. Forgiveness. All kinds of stuff. Fabulous stuff out there to read. AA. This is kindergarten spirituality, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I went to a weekend and we had a guy came in. He was a Buddhist monk and he lived in a monastery for 31 years. This may be a little difficult for some of you to believe, but he only slept 2 hours a night. And that's all he had slept for almost 15 years. And he meditated 2 times a day for 2 hours at a time. He comes into the room and there were curtains in the room and they all start moving. Talk about energy. Talk about... See, there's incredible stuff out there and we get to go play with this. We get to learn about it. But remember this. Do it along with, not instead of. I've watched people pray themselves right back into whiskey. Go to a church. Don't need AA. We got to be the only group of people. We've been given this path and then we turn our back on it. See, I do a lot of stuff along with, but never instead of. I was shown this path. This is my path. I was given this set of practices. And that's what I work with. And I'll do that till the day I die. You do all this, 12 takes care of itself. I still work with a lot of men. In Austin, some of them around the country. Over the years, I also received a blessing. I began an opportunity to sponsor people long time sober, much longer than me, dying of untreated alcoholism in the rooms, but couldn't say anything because they were elders. 3 of them in particular. Shortest time any one of them has in 37 years. And to take them through the steps again and watch what happens to them. Unbelievable. These people, guy, I love what Chris would say, well, you're too busy for a meeting. I sponsor a woman named Joanne R. from Dallas, Texas. Joanne is 80 years old. She's 40 years sober. Been wearing a pacemaker 20 years. Still goes to 4 meetings a week. Still sponsors 4 women. Oh, but I can't get to a meeting. Yes, you can. I won't turn my back on the place in which I was given a path to experience this incredible thing called God and God's power, and then to turn around and to carry that back into the rooms. Fit myself, and all the rest starts to happen. That's all I got. God bless you. I'll take some questions. says, are men's, women's, and gay meetings against their traditions? Please explain. Well, if you read the traditions, what do they say? What's the requirement for membership? Huh? Okay. So if there's more than one requirement, are you following the traditions? Yes or no? Well, then you've answered your own question. Now remember what that book says, what the traditions say, the group conscience can do what it wants, can it? So, there you go. Here, I'll spin your head a little too. See, I no longer qualify to be a member of AA, meaning I no longer have a desire to stop drinking because I haven't drank in over 24 years. The only time I had a desire to stop drinking is when I was drinking. Which is why I got to work with the long form, which says I can come in if I want to recover from alcoholism. Because I got that. So, in answer to your own question, page 87, the period of meditation is mentioned. In your experience, what is the sufficient time length for this period? That varies. If you're new to meditation, 5 minutes will seem like an eternity. After you meditate for a while, it doesn't. That's the only way. Here, if there was one slogan I would add, it would be the Nike one, do it now. Just do it. Here's how, I don't know who wrote this, but here's how to answer it. Get a timer and start and answer your own question. Keep a journal. Start with 5. Do it for 2 weeks. Go to 10. Somewhere in there you'll come up with the answer. I look at it this way. People like us, a minute is an improvement over what we used to do. Let's see. I've been through a series of sponsors with varying lengths of sobriety and sound good at meetings. Not a single one has worked with me through all 12 steps in the big book. I have followed the directions myself. I had a spiritual awakening, and now I actively sponsor several men, but I still feel like I'm missing out by not having one man with whom I can confide. Well, for me, I'll say it this way, I'm responsible. I'll find someone. Four men who call me sponsor who do not live in the town in which I can eyeball them. Now, these men have been sober for a while, and they're very accountable to a home group and other people. They don't need babysitting. But I'm responsible for finding someone to work with. You know, for me, when I've gone back to the work, at times I will find different people to help me do that. I'm not necessarily concerned with their length of sobriety. I think it was mentioned earlier, sometimes there's people who could even be fairly new in the program, they're really on fire. You don't tell them this, though. You know, it's like God's just spewing out of their mouth, but they don't know it. Now, you don't want to tell them, because they'll wake up to it then. But so you pretend like they're coming to you for wisdom, but you're just learning. So I've gone through the work with guys like that. But I'm responsible. So the only way I know how to answer that is there's a lot of people around the country who work out of the big book. I will make this statement. Don't ever let anyone read your big book for you. Understand something. Every one of us in this room, we have been influenced by our teachers, right? So let's say, for example, you've had a sponsor that didn't work with you out of the big book and really take you through the whole process. That's because no one did it with them. It's not a question of fault. You transmit what you got. You cannot transmit what you don't have. That makes sense? Tell you some neat things that have happened over the years is I've taken some people through the process who went back to their sponsors and wound up carrying this message to their sponsors, and their sponsors worked the steps. But it isn't a matter of fault or blame. I was blessed with Don Fritz coming into my life, showing me the set of precise, specific, clear-cut instructions. You get that? There's no fault to be assigned in any of this. And here's the last thing. around that issue is, you got a big book. It kind of tells you what to do. So don't be blaming your sponsor. I've been praying to God to put a sponsor in my life. He's not provided. What should I do?
Keep praying.
I'll give you a prayer, whoever wrote this. Here's what it looks like. I am sponsoring someone and I thank you, God. I am sponsoring someone and I thank you, God. That prayer does two things. It implies it's already happened and you're thanking God for that which has already happened. Time just hasn't caught up with it. You do that and you will be sponsoring somebody. Do you feel one should go completely through the steps every few years?
Yes.
What do you suggest the focus would be? 1 through 9. The focus is your current reality, the current stuff that's going to take you back to whiskey. That's normally the focus. That'll be shown to you in the 4-step. When I work the steps now, I sit down and anywhere from 1 to 3 hours review the first 3-step considerations. And then I launch into my inventory. I don't take a long time to do that. And then it comes to me. The inventory I just got through writing is current. It's the current stuff I'm up against. It's not old stuff. I've heard sponsors ask prospects to call them every day for some undetermined amount of time to test willingness. Before they would sponsor them, is this necessary? And if so, why? I don't know if it's necessary or not. Is accountability important? I think so. They talk about why. I don't know how you all were when I came to the program. I wasn't well. I wasn't disciplined. I think anything that goes along those lines is very helpful. What I really would hope in there, from a standpoint of sponsorship, if someone approaches me, I do what the book says. I meet with them, find out what I can about them. I take about 20 minutes. I talk to them about the 12 steps. Let me make this statement. You've heard this before. We say to new people, are you willing to go to any length, right? And they lie to us and say yes. Here's why they lie to us. They never ask what that means. I have a responsibility to communicate to a new person what that means, and I tell them. I go through the 12 steps, and I say, this is what you're going to have to do. In conjunction with this, you're going to go to meetings, and then ultimately you're going to work with a whole bunch of guys. I remember one guy looked at me and he goes, God, Mark, that's a bit much. I just don't want to drink. I said, well, that's what we have to do. See, and then you send them away and think about, are you willing to go to any length? I don't soft sell this deal. Hell, if spiritual living was easy, there'd be 5,000 people here. It's not. But don't soft sell this. Amends. I talk about, even with a new guy, you get to the 9th step. Oh, you're going to make a list of all the amends. You're going to pay all the money back. You're going to talk to your parents. You're going to clean all that shit up. What are you going to do? Lie to them? Pretend they don't have to do it? Right? They get done with that a day or two later, call me and say, yeah, I know what willing to go to any link looks like. I'm willing to do that. Let's rock and roll. And then we start from that point. Do I personally do this thing a call every day? Absolutely not. Why? Don said to me, I'm going to get you independent of me as quick as possible. That's why. See, don't worship the fingers. Worship God. What do I mean by the fingers? The book, the steps, my sponsor, beep, beep, beep. Right? Worship God, not the fingers. Does that make sense? See? Why? Sponsors die. They get drunk. Groups fold. That's why. You get that? So don't build those dependencies. This is an observation. I noticed this will happen. I've noticed this happening more so with women in the fellowship. They'll develop these mother-daughter kind of stuff. I'm useless if I'm that way. I get real clear with with new men I work with. I ain't your friend. I ain't your pal. You have nothing I want. Someone's got to run the show. It ain't going to be you. This is what it looks like. I mean, really go in and read Working with Others and read to the employer about how you work with people. There's no fluff in there. It doesn't also look real kind. They're very, very clear about what that whole process looks like. See? How do you continually work the 10th and 11th step? I think I went over that. Every day. A newcomer asked at a meeting, if this is a God of my understanding, and he's an all-inclusive, not exclusive, why do we say the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting when that pertains to one God? Because we started out that way and no one ever asked. I don't know. Tell you my experience around the God issue or this prayer. I look at it this way. You know, there's a lot of different dogmas or religions out there, correct? You know, there's Christian and Buddhist and Baptist and Methodist and Catholic and agnostic and atheist and all kinds. And I look at them like, imagine we're at the bottom of a hill and there's donkeys. And the donkeys are all the different religions. So there's 50 of them or 100 of them. And the only way you get up this hill is on these donkeys. So we all get on a donkey. There's the AA donkey. There's the Catholic donkey. There's the Jewish donkey. There's the Muslim donkey. There's the agnostic donkey. There's the atheist donkey. There's the Buddhist donkey. And unfortunately, as we go up the hill, instead of enjoying the view, we're arguing about the merits of my donkey over your donkey. When you get to the summit, you leave the ass behind. What is your view on spiritual experience to a spiritual conviction? That'll be my next book. God bless you. Thank you.